नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अजातपक्षा इव मातरं खगा स्तन्यं यथावत् सरक्षुद अर्था प्रियं प्रियेवाव्युषितं वसन्ना मनोरविन्दाक्षद दृक्षते त्वम्
O lotus-eyed Lord,
अहं हरिथावपदैकमूला दशानुदासो भवितास्मि भूया मनास्मरथाशुपथे गुणं स्थे कृणीतवाक्कर्म करोतु काय
O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
This verse gives the sum and substance of devotional service. This verse gives the sum and substance of devotional service. One must first become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Das Anudas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, and he also showed by his own example, the living entity should always desire to be a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Gopi Bharatu Padakamala Yora Das Das Anudas. This means that one must accept a spiritual master who comes in the disciplic succession and is a servant of the Lord. Under his direction, one must then engage one's three properties, namely his body, mind, and words. The body should be engaged in physical activities under the order of the master. The mind should think of Krishna incessantly, and one's words should be engaged in preaching the glories of the Lord. If one is thus engaged in the loving service of the Lord, one's life is successful.
Na naksha prishtam na cha paramestyam na sarvabhomam na rasadipatyam Niyoga Siddhir Apunarbhavam Va Samagyastva Virahaya Kangse.
O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, the heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides. Nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. Purport. A pure devotee never desires to gain material opportunities by rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. A pure devotee desires only to engage in loving service to the Lord in the constant association of the Lord and His eternal associates. As stated in the previous verse, Das Anu Das.
bhavitasmi.
As confirmed by Narottam Das Thakur, tandira charana sevi bhakta sanivas, janame janame hoy e avilas. To serve the Lord and the servants of his servants in the association of devotees is the only objective of a pure, unalloyed devotee. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings, always look for their mother to return and feed them, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. Purport. A pure devotee always yearns to associate personally with the Lord and render service unto him. The examples given in this regard are most appropriate. A small baby bird is practically never satisfied except when the mother bird comes to feed it. A small calf is not satisfied unless allowed to suck the milk from the mother's udder. And a chaste, devoted wife, whose husband is away from home, is never satisfied until she has the association of her beloved husband. Mamo tamasloka janeshu sakyam samsara chakre brahmatasvakarmi Tvanmaya yatma chataraka heshu ashakta chittasyana natha bhuyat. O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your illusory energy. But I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be the servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. These divine prayers which we are reading from Canto 6 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 11, are being spoken by the demon Vritrasura. This particular verse was chosen by some of our leading brahmacharis for me to speak on today. And I trust that they know exactly what I need to hear, because conditioned souls like me, we like to hear ourselves talk, so they give me the verses that will most purify my heart. And in the process of purifying my own heart, because these words are the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, everyone's hearts can be purified. How is it that such prayers for unalloyed, undivided, pure devotional service could be spoken from an ugly, horrible, violent demon who is in the battlefield, ruthlessly fighting against the devotees? This story is very instructive. Not only does it give us great philosophical insight into the nature of Krishna's mercy and the mercy of Vaishnavas, as well as how this world works, but it also reveals to us what type of inconceivable purifications a devotee may have to undergo to come to this conclusion of speaking these verses. Obviously, one who offers a prayer like this from their heart is 100% going back home, back to Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami was asked by Parikshit Maharaj, how is it that this demon could have so much love for Krishna? And Shukadeva Goswami explains. He goes back to a time which was just about when the Satya Yuga was entering into Treta Yuga. Long ago, there was a Vaishnava, a great devotee. His name was Chitraketu. He was the king of the earth. In the line of Surasena, he had everything, but he was miserable. The nature of the world. You can't always have everything. And even if you get almost everything, you'll be miserable. He was king. He had practically no rivals. All of his citizens loved him like children love a father. He was young, in perfect health. His body was beautiful. He was strong. He had immense wealth. More than anyone could have in today's world. He was the king. Such opulences, eating the finest foods, living in the most royal palaces, wearing the most costly garments and jewels. Who could ask for more materially? He got married. His wife was utterly beautiful, faithful, chaste, eager to please him in every way. Although he had the power to have a child, no child came. It turned out she was a barren woman. Now, in those days, Kshatriyas were allowed to have many wives because they had the wealth, the power, the personality to satisfy all of them. So he took on a second wife. He protected the first one very carefully. But he wanted a child, a son. Not only for his own satisfaction, but as a duty to his forefathers. For so many generations, his line were the kings. Who would be the next king? It was meant to be his own son. The second woman, beautiful, all good qualities, but couldn't give him a child. Another and another and another, until he had an enormous amount of wives. But none of them would give him a child. Chichiketu was miserable. The nature of the world, even if you have so much, even one thing can cause you so much pain. We see it every day. Our business may be going very well. Our sadhana may be very nice. Everyone likes us and praises us. We're in good health. We're young. Everything's so good. But you step on a thorn. It's like you're dancing in kirtan. You dance on a thorn. Pain. Serious pain. Can you enjoy anything else? Nothing. He was so much suffering. At that time, Angira Muni came to visit King Chitraketu. King Chitraketu welcomed him with customary Vaishnav tradition. Angira Muni inquired about his welfare. Everything that would make a king happy, he was doing. Angira Muni asked, "Then why do you look so pale and disturbed?" King Chitraketu put his head down and lamented, "I have no son." He gave a comparison. If one is severely aggrieved by hunger and thirst, and someone comes and gives you a beautiful flower garland and sandalwood pulp, will you be happy? Not at all. If your heart is lonely, no matter what else comes, cannot satisfy you. Chitraketu begged Angira Muni, "Please save me from hell. Save me from disappointing my forefathers. Do something so that I can get a son." Angira Muni had the Brahmins perform a yajna to satisfy Tvashta. From that yajna, there was Mahaprasad. The Brahmins gave it to Angira Muni. Angira Muni gave it to Chitraketu, who gave it to his favorite wife, Krita Dyuti. She ate it. And the next time Chitraketu came together with her for the purpose of having a child, she became pregnant. She was growing. The child was growing inside her like the waxing moon. Oh, how Chitraketu rejoiced. And the whole kingdom, everyone, even all his co-wives were rejoicing. Finally. And the day of the birth of that little boy, Angira Muni told Chitraketu, when you have this child, name him Harsha Shoka. Harsha means joy. Shoka means lamentation. Now, every child gives joy and lamentation. Chitraketu Maharaj had no idea to the degree he would get joy and lamentation. You see, lamentation comes in proportion to the joy we receive from something or someone. If you really love someone and they give you great joy, if they leave us, if they betray us, if they die, how much pain that causes to the heart. In the news every day we hear about so many people dying. And we think, oh, how sad. That's about the extent of it. Oh, how sad. But if someone who has given us joy dies, it causes us more pain than 10,000 people dying somewhere else. What joy little Harsha Shoka gave the king. He was ecstatic as a person could be in this material world on the bodily concept. Although he was a great Vaishnav, still, the entanglements of Maya are very deep and very intricate. His wife was in bliss, he was in bliss, and the whole kingdom was in bliss. He lived with affection for this child. Every day that affection was growing and growing and growing. Because that child gave him so much happiness, he naturally favored the mother of that child and made a serious, grave mistake. He neglected his other wives. He actually didn't give them proper attention. He was so caught up in this one wife who gave him his child. All of his free time was just with them, celebrating life. While he and his wife were becoming more blissful by the moment, his co-wives were burning in the fire of envy. Neglect is very painful. If someone praises you, it feels good. If someone chastises you, it feels bad. If someone neglects you, it feels miserable. Yes? That was the scene. Human relations in this world are very, very intricate. King Chitraketu, without even knowing it, he was just so caught up in his jubilation that he didn't recognize that he was offending his other wives. he was not giving them the emotional protection that he as a husband was meant to give them. And he was going to suffer the most severe possible reaction. Now a devotee is paradukkha-dukkhi. That means another person's joy is their joy. Another person's sorrow is our sorrow. That is selfless service. Now understand that King Chitraketu, when he chose a wife, they were good. They were obviously devotees. He was a great Vaishnav. Would he marry any woman that wasn't a Vaishnav? It's quite obvious. He didn't just marry them because of their physical beauty, which was definitely there, but because they were really good souls. But he brought the worst out in them. They were definitely not pure devotees. But as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, every living being has a divine and demoniac nature. We give the example of the two dogs, the good dog and the bad dog. And they're both barking. They're fighting against one another. And the one that is fed the most food will become strong. And the one who you do not feed will become weak and lose the battle. And that food is the time we give it. When we invest time in feeding that good dog, that divine quality within us, by practicing devotional service, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And when by following the regulative principles carefully we neglect that bad dog and stop talking nonsense things and doing nonsense things and thinking nonsense things as far as possible by keeping engaged in good devotional service, then our demoniac nature is defeated by Krishna consciousness. Now this is not only cultivated by ourself, but it's also our responsibility to cultivate the divine qualities in others. That was Chitraketu Maharaja's grave mistake. By neglecting to feed the divine qualities within his wives, the demoniac qualities were getting stronger and stronger and stronger. That neglect was literally feeding the bad dog, feeding their demoniac nature. And those virtuous women became victims of envy. What is the nature of envy? Jayato vishayan pungsang sangastoshiva jayate. We contemplate the objects of the senses, we become attached. From attachment, lust. When lust is unfulfilled, anger. When we're not getting what we want, and we see that someone else has more, we become envious. And envy and anger are so interconnected. When you are envious of someone, you're naturally, potentially very angry at that person. And when there's anger, we lose our intelligence. We forget what is right and what is wrong.
and then we engage in abominable activities. That is what happened. These poor spirit souls became victims of envy. And day by day, their minds were working in such complicated ways. Why is he not looking at us? Why is he not saying to us? He used to speak such sweet words to me. Why all those sweet words are now for someone else? And they were talking amongst themselves. Our husband is in Maya. He's cruel. He's hard-hearted. We cannot tolerate this. Due to that envy, festering like poison within their hearts, it impelled them to engage in the most abominable activity. Murder to an innocent little child. They fed it poison. One day, the queen, Kritadyuti, called the maidservant, "Bring my little child." And the maidservant, "Oh, wake up, wake up." He looked like he was sleeping very soundly. But there was no movement. Eventually, she realized he was dead. She cried out, "Alas," and fell to the floor. The king came running, and when she saw her child dead, she was wailing, fell to the ground unconscious. Soon everybody around was crying piteously. King Chichiketu heard this and came running to the scene and saw not only was his wife suffering miserably, but his son was dead. It was unbearable. But what or who gives you the most happiness has the potential of making you suffer the worst. It is the nature of love. And there are so many variations of this phenomena. When you invest your love in someone, they have the capacity to cause you more pain than anyone or anything. Because pain of the heart is deeper and more excruciating than pain of the body, or even pain of the mind. Their hearts were pierced. And he was watching his wife. She just was beside herself, crying out, "What? Oh, Providence, why are you so cruel? Oh, Lord, what is the sense of what you're doing? Yes, I know that there's no law that a father has to live, that a son has to live and see the father die. But look what you're doing." She's praying to the Lord. "Try to make sense of what's going on here. If fruitive activities are like this, where you have a child, a baby, and it's growing, and you're developing such deep affection, and then the baby dies, and you suffer so much, then who in this world will ever want to have a child? What discouragement are you creating?" Then she looked at her little boy and said, "Wake up! You've slept long enough. Please wake up." She was delirious. "Your playmates are waiting for you to play with them. Nice prasad is already made. Come and eat. Wake up. Why are you doing this?" And
Then she broke down unconscious. Why have you left me? Where have you gone, my child? And King Chitraketu, with his mouth wide open, was loudly wailing, crying. And all the other queens that conspired to murder this little child, they were all pretending to cry. And everyone in the world was crying. He couldn't do anything except lament. Hearing the news, Angira Muni came back to the palace along with Narada Muni. Seeing the situation, Narada Muni instructed King Chitraketu about the nature of this material world. The soul is eternal. All attachments on this bodily concept are meant and designed to cause us to suffer. Why not take shelter of the Supreme Lord, which is the only real duty of this human life? Hearing this philosophy from Narada Muni, King Chitraketu was pacified. He bowed his head in gratitude for the enlightenment he had received. At that time, Narada Muni turned to the little child, the corpse, and said, "Oh, little Jiva, come back into this boy's body and speak to us why you have left. In fact, I give you the power to come back and grow up in this body and enjoy with your mother and father and become the next king and rule the world. Come back." Then the little boy sat up, opened his eyes, looked around, and spoke. "This body, this is not me. I'm the eternal soul. The soul is always manifesting various forms according to our fruit of activities and our karmas." The example he gave, just like money. Yes? You have money and you give it to a shopkeeper to buy something, and then that shopkeeper buys some other stock for his shop, and the money goes into somebody else's hands, and then that wholesaler puts the money in the bank and it goes in someone else's hands, and then the bank loans it out to someone else and it goes to someone else. So money is going from one hand to one hand to one place to one place to one place to one place. It said similarly, the spirit soul. It's going from one body with a set of parents and brothers and sisters and cousins and aunts and uncles and friends and lovers. And then it goes to another and another and another and another. Who is my real father? Who is my real mother? Not these people. They looked at Chitraketu and Kretadyuti, not them. They're not my real mother, father. I've had so many millions and millions and millions of mothers and fathers. 8,400,000 species of life. We have mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, and all other relatives. But in the passing of time, they're all gone. It's like a river. And all our different births in this material world are like waves in the river. The power, the river of time is carrying us. And we just, a wave, and then another wave, and another wave, and another wave, birth after birth after birth after birth. And in every birth, we become so entangled, we become so attached, we become so infatuated by the circumstances. Ignorant of the reality
that in a flash it can all vanish.
The little child
did not desire,
although Narada Muni gave him the blessing, if you want, stay in this body, grow up, give your father happiness, be the king. The child said, my karma is destined to go to another place. After speaking the knowledge of the eternal nature of the soul, the child laid down, and the soul again departed. But now, Chitraketu and his wife, they understood. And not only that, after hearing this transcendental philosophy, all the queens that killed it, they were repenting, lamenting for what they had done. And they took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to atone for that offense. Narada Muni told Chitraketu Maharaj that the only shelter, the only reality, is in the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And I will give you a mantra. By chanting this mantra and following my instructions very carefully, within only 5 days, you will have the personal darshan of Shankarshan Vishnu. King Chitraketu surrendered his life. This is very interesting. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochati nakankshati. One who attains the Brahman platform, the spiritual platform of consciousness, does not hanker nor lament. And the great acharyas teach us that this material world is about these two principles, hankering and lamenting. And whatever enjoyment there is just somewhere in between the two. But it doesn't last very long, especially from the perspective of eternality, the reality. We hanker for what we don't have. We long for it. We crave for it. We work for it. We strive for it. Sometimes we'll even engage in immoral activities to somehow get it. And we may get it, but then it's lost.
And we lament.
Hankering, lamenting. Angira Muni told Maharaj Chitraketu, when you were hankering for something you didn't have, you were too much absorbed with the hope and the expectation of getting it. Therefore, your mind was so materialistic, I could not speak transcendental knowledge to you then. You could not hear it. But in your total lamentation, you could hear it. When he was hankering for something he didn't have, his heart was not receptive to Krishna consciousness. But when he was lamenting, when he lost it, and there was no hope of getting it back, then he was completely receptive. So of the two, hankering and lamenting, lamenting is a more miserable situation. They're both miserable. Yes? When you're hankering for something, you're not happy. It's a very unhappy condition to be craving for something you don't have. Craving. Even the queens, they were craving, they were hankering, and they were lamenting because they didn't get it. So when we're craving for something, there's a hope that we'll get it. And therefore, the infatuation is just increasing, increasing, and increasing. But when we get it and lose it, it's done. Then lamentation. And in that lamentation, there's almost a hopeless situation. So King Chechaketu was not so intoxicated when he was lamenting as he was when he was hankering. They're both miserable situations. Lamentation is far more miserable than hankering. When you're hankering for something, you have nothing. You don't have. It's anxiety. It's suffering. But then you get it and you enjoy it. When it's lost, that lamentation is worse. It took that to sober him up. And then he could hear. So with that realization, which is very instructive to all of us, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead wholeheartedly. Now why is this so important in Srimad Bhagavatam? Because those who are of good intelligence, they learn by hearing. Otherwise, we have to go through the whole process ourselves. And then, through that experience, we may learn. But unless we hear properly, we go through the same experience again and again and again and again, birth after birth after birth, and never learn. You see, what Chitraketu Maharaj has gone through, we've all gone through it. Probably hundreds and thousands of times since we've entered into this material existence. Still, we haven't learned our lesson. But if we open our hearts to submissively hear from Shukadeva Goswami and the previous acharyas who are expanding this message, we could actually learn. We understand. Chitraketu is me and you. But if we just hear about some ordinary person like me and you, it doesn't affect us so much. Therefore, Chitraketu was staged in such a grandiose, amazing, and exciting story to really get our attention. So he took shelter of the Supreme Lord. Why? Because he gave up hope of being happy in the material world. This is a very, very fearful thought. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught us like this. It's not going to sell books in the market of the secular audience, because they are hankering for happiness in this material world, and in their lamentation, they're just hankering for something else. They hanker, they lament. Then they, in that lamentation, they hanker for something else, and then they lament and hanker for something else and lament. Birth after birth after birth. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you cannot really approach Krishna sincerely. You cannot really cry out his holy name with deep feeling until you lose hope that you can be happy in this material world. Because Maya is very powerful. Please understand, she's as powerful as Krishna. She's Krishna's
She's Krishna's own energy.
Daiviheshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya.
Material nature, very difficult to overcome. These three modes of nature, the gunas, are like ropes that keep us bound and drag us and pull us from one activity to another. And we're like prisoners, just being dragged from place to place, from thing to thing. What are we doing? And we consider ourselves the doer. Ahankara vimudatma, so foolish.
We think ourselves the doer of activities. But actually, we're just being dragged by the ropes of ignorance, passion, and sometimes goodness.
But Krishna is the master of creation. Maya dyakshena prakriti. It's all working under His control. By our free will, we come into material nature because we want to enjoy separately from God. And once we come here, we are under the laws of nature. Krishna is not directly involved in our fruitive activities and the reactions. They're happening just like the king. When you go into a prison house, he's not directly putting you in this cell and punishing you for this or that. He has the agencies of the law doing that work. But that law is all-powerful within this material existence. And we are insignificant. We are totally subordinate to that law, always. But if we take shelter of Krishna, if you take shelter of the king, he can take you out of that whole system. Just like in the United States of America, when the president is about to leave his office, he has certain powers where he can release prisoners, even people who have death sentence, even people who are in for life. By his presidential powers, he can say, this man, make him free. That's his prerogative before he leaves his office. Krishna is the king of kings. He never leaves his office either.
Daiviyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya.
Right now, don't blame Krishna for our suffering. We left him, and okay, here's this material nature, there's three modes, and there's karmic laws, and you make what you want to make out of your life. You're responsible. The joys that come are the karmic reactions to what we've done. The sufferings, the karmic reactions. We may not understand how they work or when or why or any of those other things, but they're all working together, ultimately to bring us to surrendering to Krishna. The Shastra says that for a devotee who is engaged in devotional service, that means that devotee is not engaging in any immoral or sinful activities, but engaging in Krishna service. Krishna service is free of karma. It is akarma.
For that devotee,
the sufferings we endure is exhausting all our previous sins. And the happiness we're getting is exhausting all of our previous piety, our material happiness and our material sufferings. So let it all go. We just keep doing devotional service. And yes, we suffer. So many reasons to suffer. All our sinful karmas of all our past lives are just being burned up by that suffering. And the material happiness, all our pious activities are being burned up. And at the time of death, when there's no more pious or impious activities, there's no more rebirth. And if we're fixing our mind on Krishna, we go back home, back to Godhead.
by chanting his holy names. Sarva dharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masaja. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of dharma. Because most varieties of dharma are meant for material happiness. Artha kama dhamma moksha. People engage in religious activities or approach God or demigods because we want better economic situation in this world. You can't blame people. Poverty is a very fearful thing. It's really miserable. When you have no food, you have no shelter, your children are suffering. People are very afraid of poverty. They see it. Many have experienced it. And people will work so hard to protect themselves from it. But the problem is, the more you have, the more you need. We see very, very fabulously wealthy people. And usually they have to work harder than the poor people who are just struggling to get out of poverty. Why? Because as you build up your empire, it's going to be, the bigger you are, the more people are going to try to destroy it. And the more you have, the more you need to maintain what you have. And in the world today, because of all the competition from all directions, the bigger you get, you have to keep getting bigger. Otherwise, you'll be crushed. You can't just stay where you are and be happy. It doesn't work that way. Not in the mode of passion. So we see millionaires, billionaires, they're just flying all over the place and under so much stress and so much anxiety. Why? Because if they don't just keep fighting, then they'll lose everything. Everything will collapse. And they'll be disgraced. With nothing. You could be a billionaire today, but if you don't fight and foam at the mouth and practically give up all the things you like to do just to maintain it, what happens is soon you're billions of dollars in debt. And you might end up in jail. It happens every day. Is that happy? In this world, we have to be very careful because we could be prisoners of success. Did you ever think of that? Being a prisoner of success. The more successful you become, the more you become a prisoner of that success. You're ruled over by it. You're controlled by it. You're a slave of it. And you think, I am the controller. I have so many employees, and I have so many people who are depending on me, and I can hire, and I can fire, and I can destroy countries. But actually, you may think you're controlling, but you're totally controlled by your success. The ego, the competition, everything, you're a slave. Famous people, we have seen how they're prisoners of their success. I've talked to famous people and people who know famous people. I mean, really famous people. They have no life,
practically.
Wherever they go, there's just cameras all over the place. They just want to take their child to a restaurant. And they're walking all over you, and people are just putting books in your van, signing autographs. Just leave me alone. I was talking to one lady whose relative is a very, very famous person. I was saying how they went to a restaurant, and it was such a relief because they got to eat in peace. But that person had to disguise himself in so many ways. All these different sunglasses and putting on these different cosmetics and wearing clothes that he would never wear before. Practically like a prisoner trying to escape from a prison by disguising yourself in so many ways. That's what he has to do just to live a normal life. Is that happy? But yet we think something very good. Prisoner of success. We're prisoners of failure. We're prisoners of success. We're prisoners when we don't do anything. Why? Because this material world is a prison house. Whatever you do, you're a prisoner. Therefore, Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Purityaja, Artha Kama Dhamma Moksha. Yes, look at Indra. He's prisoner of success. We read about it so many times. He has such a big position. And he earned that position. Please understand, it wasn't that Indra was just accidentally born like this. In previous births, he had to perform so many tapasya, so many austerities. He had to perform such yajnas. He had to engage in so many pious activities, birth after birth after birth. He worked really, really hard to get the post of Indra. And now he has all that opulence and all that power and all that control. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, is he happy? He's always worried. He's always in anxiety. He always needs something else and something more. And this is the heavenly planets. What to speak of this planet? It's a prisoner. So what is this? Worshipping God for economic prosperity. Or worshipping God because we're in distress. Distress is there. But Prahlad Maharaj tells us, by trying to solve the problem of distress on the material platform, the solution may solve that particular distress, but it creates more complicated problems than the original problem. Sense gratification. We worship God to fulfill our sense gratification, but Krishna tells us right out, you cannot ever satisfy your desire for sense gratification. It burns like fire. You satisfy it, and do you attain Om Shanti Shanti? You feel some temporary mundane ecstasy. But then as soon as it's gone, as soon as that ecstasy's gone, the anxiety, the distress for more increases. So why worship God for that? And some people worship God for to be pious and good to others. Religiosity. Which is very good. It's more in the mode of goodness. But even then, it's on the bodily concept. We do good for those we love, but ultimately they'll either betray us, or leave us, or disappoint us, or die. Every one of your loved ones, that is the culmination of your relationship on the physical platform. And everything we achieve is lost when we die. So what for? And moksha, liberation, no more sufferings. But for a devotee, liberation is worse than hell, mukti. Because the real need of the soul to love is not satisfied. Aruya krishtena paramparam tata. Therefore, the likelihood of being in that Brahma Jyoti is we fall down again into this material world. Why? Because the need to love and be loved is still missing within the soul. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu claims, Purushartha Siromani, the crest jewel of all purposes of religion, is to awaken love of God. Therefore, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishavimas. Just give up all these attempts to raise yourself on the material platform. Abramabhuvana loka punar avartan orjana. Whether you're Brahma or whether you're in a hellish planet, everything's temporary and you have to die. They're all places of misery. Just surrender to me, Krishna says. And Krishna can take us out of this prison of material existence. Because this prison is inescapable by any other means except when Krishna releases you. There's no other way out. Prisoner, prison of failure, prison of success, prison of hankering, prison of lamenting. From the highest planet to the lowest, everyone's a prisoner in every situation. And the greatest illusion is, I think I'm free. I think I'm the controller. I think I'm the proprietor. And I am the enjoyer. What Chitraketu, that great king and that great learned scholar and that great devotee, had to go through to realize this. And just by hearing about him, we have the opportunity to realize it all today, right now. In fact, Shukadev Goswami says at the end of this story, anyone who just hears this story attentively, especially in the morning, when our mind is awake, hopefully, we don't have to suffer any anxieties in this material world. We can go back home, back to God, and it's that easy. Just listen. I'm trying to listen myself. Just repeating these words. But it's only the beginning of the story. Krishna wants his devotee really to become pure. I'm not trying to scare you, but Prabhupada is trying to enlighten us. Let us travel through Chitraketu Maharaja's lifetime and learn his lessons with him. He chanted the mantra given by Narada Muni and engaged in devotional service. And as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, he gave up all hope of ever being happy in this material world. He wanted happiness at the lotus feet of Krishna. You only get Krishna when you lose all hope for any other happiness. karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, they will not bring us Krishna. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmanya navratam anukulena krishna anushilanam bhaktar uttama.
This verse is the foundation on which the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu was built upon. What is pure devotional service? The exclusive benediction that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give the world. Pure devotional service is without the desire to enjoy this material sense gratification, even in the higher planets. It is service to the Lord without even the desire for mystic cities, powers by which we can do miracles that will put everyone around us in a wonderstruck state. Our service must be free of any tinge of desire, even for mukti or liberation. Our only motivation when serving the Lord should be to favorably please Him. That is pure devotional service. And that is what Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to convince us of. So Chitraketu Maharaj, through the experiences he went through, and through the grace of the Vaishnavas, hearing from them, he lost all hope of any happiness in this material world. And therefore, he completely took shelter of the Lord. And from his heart, he was calling out the Lord's holy names. Shall I continue? Because of the grace of Narada Muni and because of the sincerity in which he received the grace of Narada Muni, he was able to have the personal darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his own associate in just a few days. The mercy is there. But what is our receptivity to get that mercy? That is very important. Angira Muni came when he was hankering for a son. He could have given him the mercy then. He had it. But he was not receptive because he still had so much hope of being happy in this world. But when he lost that hope, he was really receptive. Really receptive. And then when Narada Muni spoke to him, Angira Muni enlightened him, he could take those instructions and become enlightened in 5 days. Amazing. Srila Prabhupada gave his mercy to so many tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands, millions of people. In his books, in the form of the association of his devotees, in his own personal association. Srila Prabhupada explained that the mercy of Krishna coming through the Vaishnavas is like the sun. It's shining for everyone. But according to our capacity to receive it, that's how much we benefit. Some of us can get this message, but it may take us many, many, many births to finally surrender. And others can just immediately. Very important. So he chanted his mantra and he was given the darshan of Shankarshan, the Supreme Lord Narayan, who was bedecked with precious celestial divine jewels. He had bright blue garments and was the embodiment of supreme spiritual beauty. King Chitraketu was in transcendental ecstasy, seeing the form of the Supreme Lord. And when you see the beauty of Krishna, then what are all these pale, insignificant pleasures of this world that we're hankering for and lamenting over in comparison? Sri Rupa Goswami tells that if you're attached to your property, your prestige, your friends and your relatives and everything else, do not go to Keshi Ghat, where River Jamuna is flowing. Because there you will find Govinda, standing in his Tribhanga Swarup, his threefold bending form playing upon his flute, Venu. And he will steal away your heart. That is the meaning of Hari. Hari steals away all our inauspiciousness. But how does he do so? By stealing our hearts. Stealing our hearts away from all of the prison house of material existence. And all these shackles that keep us bound to the prison house of this material existence. Krishna consciousness is so beautiful. We can Krishnize everything. We don't have to give up hankering and lamenting. We just have to hanker and lament for the right things. We don't want to just be dry like stones, no hankering, no lamenting. The greatest devotees are always hankering and lamenting. But for Krishna. Gopis are hankering for Krishna. And then when he's gone, they're lamenting for Krishna. And they're always hankering and lamenting for Krishna. The cowherd boys are hankering and lamenting for Krishna. Nanda and Yashoda are hankering and lamenting. In serving Krishna, in pleasing Krishna, it's all for Krishna. And we find in the great Acharyas, in the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, we find how he's hankering for the association of the Vaishnavas. Hankering for the association of Srinivasa Acharya Ramchandra Kaviraj. His dearest friends, such intimate, loving relationships, hankering for the Vaishnavas' company. And when Srinivasacharya and Ramchandra Kaviraj departed from this world, Jaya Nilo Premadana, he's lamenting for the loss of them. Now that lamentation is spiritual ecstasy. Because in that lamentation of separation, there's the deepest union within the core of the heart. The union of the soul with the great Vaishnavas and with Krishna is so much powerful in the feelings of separation. So yes, we should be hankering for the association of devotees. We should be hankering for the darshan of Krishna. We should hanker to go to La Mangalarti. We should hanker to chant the holy names of the Lord. We should hanker for service. That type of hankering will burn away all our hankering for material sources of misery. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha jonaya evate atyanta kanta konteya nate shuramate buddha. Material pleasure is the source of misery because it's all temporary. But how to give it up? By keeping constantly engaged in Krishna's service with our body, mind, and words. Hankering for Krishna and lamenting for Krishna. We'll always be with Krishna.
So Chitraketu Maharaj
was seeing the supreme, all-beautiful, all-attractive personality face to face. There was nothing of this material world that could distract him. But still, he was in a vulnerable condition.
After worshiping the Lord, becoming an associate of the Lord, just being with the Lord in such a divine, in his own abode, Chitraketu was ecstatically riding around in an airplane, chanting the holy names. And while roaming through the universe, just chanting in bliss, he had just seen the Lord, totally liberated. He happened to come to the hermitage of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is in an assembly of siddhas, rishis, yogis, swamis, all renounced sages. And they all were sitting at his feet to hear about the principles of divine renunciation. As he was giving them a most magnificent discourse on the glories of renunciation, Parvati, his consort, was sitting on his lap. And right in front of the sages, as he was talking, he was very affectionately embracing her. Chitraketu was very much astounded to see this. And he spoke. He honored Shiva. He worshipped Shiva. But still, he spoke. He laughed. It was just too much. Lord Shiva, you are the greatest Vaishnav. You're an expansion of the Lord himself. You're a supreme personality. You're all-knowing. You're renounced, you're everything, and here you are with your disciples, these sages, speaking about renunciation, embracing your wife, Parvati. This is not becoming of you. At that time, Shiva smiled because he knew Chitraketu's intention. And all the great rishis, sages, yogis, and siddhas around him, they all, seeing Shiva smile, they all smiled and didn't say anything because they knew he wasn't criticizing. He was praising Lord Shiva, but he had some good motivation for what he was saying. Actually, our acharyas explain his psychology. That yad yad acharati sreshtas tad tad eveta rojana. What great people do, common men follow. Though there's no doubt in Chitraketu's mind that Lord Shiva is totally transcendental to all material desires. He's always in the ecstasy of love for Krishna. But when he's in this material world, what he does, people are going to follow. If he's in the association of all these sages, if he's embracing women like this, then they will also think that they can do like this. They will follow what he does. Just like Srila Prabhupada explains, Shiva drank poison. So there are so many Shivites today who drink poison in the form of hashish, ganja, chiras, yes? Smoking chillums. And we have seen, it's a ritual. Before they puff on the chillum, they will chant mantras to Lord Shiva. Om Namo Shivaya. Like that. It's a sacrament. You are laughing, but for them it's very sacred activity. It's foundational to their spiritual culture. In fact, if they give you the chillum and you say, no, 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 I don't do this, Shiva aparad. We chanted the mantra. That means now it is Mahaprasad. And Yogiji, he just puffed from it, so it's Mahaprasad. If you don't take it, you are dishonoring Mahaprasad. Aparad, aparad. Serious. Srila Prabhupada explains, Lord Shiva drank poison, so they're thinking, because he did that, now I can do this. So Chitraketu was thinking, if you embrace your wife, it should be in a solitary, private place, not in a public place in front of rishis and yogis and swamis. You shouldn't do it like this. You should do it in a private place. This is not exemplary. It will lead people on the wrong path. So he was actually just trying to serve Lord Shiva by saying this. Yes, you are transcendental. You are divine. But your activities could mislead others. Please. Parvati was outraged. How dare you speak to my husband like that? You are a king. You are the lowest among men. You are so proud, so puffed up, that you dare to instruct and criticize Shiva? Huh? Do you know who's watching this scene right now? Not only all these great rishis and yogis who have renounced the world, why didn't they say anything? Because they know that Shiva is spotless. Lord Brahma, he's watching. Why doesn't he come down and say something? Because he knows he's spotless. All the greatest of the demigods, they are watching. Why don't they say anything? Chitraketu, you think that you know more, that you are greater, than you are in a superior position, than all these great sages, than all the demigods, than Lord Brahma himself? I curse you. Become a demon in the family of demons. But actually, she addressed him as her son. At that very last verse, she said, because you have offended, my dear son, she said, my dear son, you take birth in the line of demons. Parvati was being merciful. Because she is the mother of every living creature within this material existence. During our Mayapur Yatra, we went to Simantadweep. Do you remember? There, Shiva was dancing in ecstasy, chanting the names of Gauranga. And Parvati never saw her husband in such a state. She said, who is this Gauranga? Tell me, why are you so happy? And he said that the Supreme Lord Krishna appears with the sentiments of Radharani in the form of Gauranga. And he gives love of God freely in this beautiful golden complexion. So she went to Simantadweep, and she just constantly was chanting the names of Gauranga, and Lord Chaitanya appeared to her. And she prayed, "Why am I so unfortunate? All your devotees, they are just trying to help everyone get released from material existence by preaching Krishna consciousness. And they're always with you, hearing and chanting about your pastimes and helping others. And my service is to keep everyone bound to this material existence, to create illusions and attachments in people's minds, to keep them away from you. There's no one more unfortunate than me." And Lord Chaitanya said that you are my beloved Radharani, Parvati, in the form of her external energy. Srimati Radharani is making every arrangement for all the devotees to love me in the spiritual world. And in this world, you, my own pleasure potency, take your form to test people and to ultimately purify the conditioned souls so that they will come back to my loving service. So Parvati is the consort of the Lord, who is the mother of all living beings within this creation, within the whole cosmic manifestation. So she was talking to Chitraketu like a naughty child. And as a mother, she gave him the proper punishment. Now, what was the punishment for? Why? This, dear audience, is most important to understand very deeply and carefully. Are you awake? If you're not, now you are. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is quoted by Srila Prabhupada. Chitraketu, after giving up all hope of any happiness in material existence by suffering more miserably than anyone could possibly suffer, and wholeheartedly taking shelter of the association of the great Vaishnavas, following their instructions with their hearts and souls, he was given personal association of the Lord. He saw the Lord. The Lord blessed him. The Lord spoke to him. But what happened? He became a little proud. Hare Krishna. Chitraketu became proud. I saw Lord Vishnu. I'm so pure. The Lord is so merciful to me. I saw Vishnu. And because of the pride, the little bit of pride that developed in his heart from getting such personal association with the Lord, he thought that he was in a position to instruct Lord Shiva. Even though he was doing it as a well-wisher, that was an offense. And herein Srila Prabhupada cites, Trinarapi sunichena taror ibasihishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sada Hari. We should be more humble than the straw in the street, tolerant like tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. If we're not trying to seriously cultivate this consciousness, we will offend others. As soon as there's pride, an offensive mentality is inherent within us. And if we start offending others, if we start criticizing others, it's very likely that we will offend a Vaishnava.
And if we offend a Vaishnav, we have to pay serious consequences. We see this in Chitraketu Maharaj. We see this throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in the Bhakti Shastras. Again and again and again, there are examples of even powerful, great personalities who offend Vaishnavas. And what happens to them? Here is Chitraketu. What is our position compared to him? He was just in the spiritual world seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Lord is bestowing mercy on him, love and affection. And he's offering beautiful prayers that are in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we cite those prayers that he offered to the Lord. But he became proud. Very dangerous. Within our contemporary life, there were direct associates of Lord Chaitanya who became proud and criticized Vaishnavas and fell down. Ramchandra Puri was a personal associate of Madhavendra Puri. He was an associate of Ishwara Puri. God brothers, what association? But still, there was some pride in his heart. And he thought he could instruct a superior person. And he lost all his good qualities. Fell down. And here we have Chitraketu. He's in the spirit. He's seeing Vishnu. Yes, you may be a Prabhupada disciple. You may be a personal servant of Prabhupada. You may have been part of his personal intimate entourage. You may have been one of the first devotees to help him. But if it makes us proud, it makes us feel that we're better than someone else, even a second generation devotee or a third generation devotee who's a Vaishnav, who never met Prabhupada, who's even touching our feet and begging us, please give me nectar. If we offend that person, if we unnecessarily criticize such a person because of our high connection, reaction will come. We could lose our taste for Krishna consciousness. We could fall down. It's very serious. We could be a pujari. Personally, for years and years and years, doing all the offerings to Krishna. But if we become proud and think we're better than others, and criticize a Vaishnav, we could fall down. We could be personal associates with a lot of, with great, great association of great souls, spiritual master, powerful yogis, Vaishnavas. But if we're proud that I'm more fortunate than you, and criticize another, could lose everything. This is how powerful Maya is. Here is Chitraketu. After all he went through, and after surrendering to his guru, he became a little proud. And what was his offense? Because he was proud, he thought that he could criticize Lord Shiva. And he did it for a very constructive, good purpose. But still, he criticized. And Parvati, who was the mother, his mother, had to teach him a good lesson. And through him, had to teach all of us a good lesson.
In this regard, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Therefore, whatever our position, however high or low we may be, whoever we may have associated with in our lives, you have to remain meek and humble and go on with your devotional service and not criticize others."
The guru can make offense to disciples if criticizing without proper motivation.
Although it is the duty of guru to sometimes criticize, it is sometimes the duty of a superior to criticize.
But if it's not done very carefully, very constructively, there could be massive reactions.
We read about it.
And we see it.
"Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised both of his arms and he cried out, 'Chant the holy names and do not criticize others.'"
If Chitraketu, who just saw Vishnu, is not exempt to this rule, don't think that you or me will be.
It's very clear. The mind affected by Maya will always justify why I have the right.
But be careful.
Yes, you have the right to fall down. That's the problem. You have the right to criticize, but you also have the right to fall down, even from such an elevated position.
Don't think a big post, don't think being honored and worshipped gives you the right to criticize others.
But in Kali Yuga, you're just a sentimental fool if you don't. That's the way the world will label you.
Yes?
When the internet is full of so much criticisms and condemnations.
The Bhagavatam explains, in this story actually, that ordinary people who may even be in the guise of devotees, due to whatever reason, will always be there to blaspheme and criticize great devotees. It's always been, it will always be. We should never be surprised with this.
In this regard, Srila Prabhupada tells us a Bengali saying.
Do you like Bengali sayings?
When Prabhupada speaks them, they are very relishable. There's a Bengali saying that if the vulture curses the cow is not disturbed. The nature of a vulture, being the lowest of animals, is to curse the cow. But that curse cannot take effect on the cow, because a cow is a holy animal.
So similarly, the blasphemes and the criticisms of envious people, or ordinary people, or materialistic people, even in the guise of devotees, against sincere Vaishnavas, should never be taken seriously.
And the great Vaishnavas also, the cow doesn't care for the curse of the vulture.
As long as we know we're sincerely trying to serve Krishna, then what should we care what people say?
But we should be very, very careful that we don't become vulture.
We can be vultures with neck beads and tilak and dhotis and saris. And we can even have high positions. But we should not criticize devotees. Prabhupada warns us so seriously in this story that we should just go on performing our sadhana, engaged in our devotional service, and be careful not to find faults with Vaishnavas. To encourage devotees, to see the glories in devotees. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, there was that one devotee who came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Kuliagram and told him, "With this mouth I have blasphemed your devotees. What should I do?" Lord Chaitanya said, "Blasphemy of devotees, criticizing of devotees, is like drinking poison. The only antidote is nectar. Glorifying devotees is nectar. With the same mouth that drank the poison of blasphemy, praise those devotees, drink nectar, and you will go back home, back to Godhead." But it's very difficult. Because when so many people are talking criticisms, and then they're just anybody can put their criticisms on the international venue of the internet, and anybody could say anything about anyone, it becomes fashionable. We have seen. People are very proud and fashionable about criticizing others. It makes them seem very important. It makes them really feel like they're in the groove. And if you don't want to hear it, and you don't want to speak it, that's sentimental, just sentimentalism, fool. You will be labeled as a sentimental fool if you don't criticize and blaspheme Vaishnavas by other Vaishnavas. That's the condition in this age of Kali. But who should we take seriously? Those people who are putting the stake of spiritual death in their own hearts by doing it? Or the words of Srila Prabhupada, the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his associates and the entire parampara? They are all calling out very, very loudly, do not criticize others. Encourage Vaishnavas. Follow proper etiquette. Chant the glories of the Lord, chant the glories of the devotees. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasehishuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. This verse is not a detail. Why is it quoted so much? It's a matter of spiritual life and death. To learn to offer honor to others and not expect it or demand it ourselves. Yes, Parvati saw that some pride was in the heart of Chitraketu because he became a personal associate of the Lord. And she had to root that pride out of his heart. So she cursed him to fall down, Hare Krishna, and be a demon. Now Chitraketu Maharaj, he understood his mistake. And he was such an advanced devotee. Even though he made that mistake, he was such an advanced devotee. He showed us how, even if we do something wrong, how to react.
He just saw Vishnu. He was a great king.
He had the power to curse Parvati. Can you imagine? That's how powerful he was, the Bhagavatam says. Who amongst us has the power to curse the goddess who is the superintendent of the entire cosmic manifestation? He had that power to curse her, and it would take effect. But he was not angry. He was not disappointed. He was grateful. This was the greatness of Chitraketu.
When he was cursed and criticized severely as being the lowest rascal in front of everybody, not only in front of everybody, but it was going to be in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam forever. When Goddess Parvati labels you as being a rascal and nonsense,
would you like that? He bowed down to Parvati with a grateful heart and thanked her for her mercy. Yes, Parvati, I accept whatever you're saying.
Actually, please know I was not criticizing your husband. It may have sounded like that. I acted improperly. I shouldn't have instructed him. But I was only doing it because I adore him. I worship him. I love him. I was just trying to serve him. But I served him in the wrong way. That was his understanding. He explained himself, but he accepted.
If this is what I must go through, I'm not the controller. You're not the controller. Krishna's the controller. And Krishna knows what's best for each devotee. Tatena kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmikritam vibhaga.
Srila Prabhupada quotes in this regard, who is qualified to go back to Godhead? That person who is in the most difficult, miserable, traumatic situation and with folded palms thanks the Lord with grateful heart and bows down. Chitraketu Maharaj exemplified this principle. He thanked Parvati with all respect. Dear Mother, yes, whatever you've done is good. Now with your permission, I will go to hell and be a demon.
Shiva, Parvati, and all the great sages were so deeply impressed with Chitraketu Maharaj.
Parvati was in ecstasy. How he passed this test. What a great saint. And Shiva just looked at her and smiled and said, see, what is a Vaishnav? No one could be like a Vaishnav.
Narayana para sarve nakutashtana vibhyate swarga pavarga apituliyate darshanam.
Those who worship Lord Narayan with love, whether they're in hell, whether they're in heaven, whether they're liberated, it doesn't make any difference. They only want to serve. They're happy just serving in any situation. Whether they're blasphemed miserably, whether they're cast into hell, or whether they're exalted to the spiritual world or the heavenly planets, it makes no difference. They're simply happy serving Krishna. Because that's what makes Krishna happy. That is a Vaishnav.
Shiva was praising Chitraketu. Parvati was praising Chitraketu. All the sages were praising Chitraketu for being so glorious. And it was at this point that he really attained the highest perfection. When he was tested to such a degree of being cursed to be a demon, and he was grateful. That was the culmination of his spiritual sanctity. But then he became a demon. It's not so easy to go back to Godhead. But we can learn through him and go back to Godhead in this very life. Should I continue? What time is lunch, Prasad? Does anyone know? Well, until I get the message, I will continue. Meanwhile, back in Swargaloka, King Indra is sitting on his throne. He's being worshipped by all sages, rishis, demigods, with Sachi, his consort, on his side, on a beautiful throne. And while he's being worshipped, his guru, Brihaspati, comes into the room. Indra didn't criticize him. He saw him, but he didn't do anything. After all, he's sitting on a throne and everyone's chanting Indra's glories. In the Samaveda, Rig Veda, there's so many beautiful hymns praising Lord Indra. They're chanting these hymns and chamaras and gifts. And he's just performing his duty by accepting all this puja. That's the duty of Indra, to accept all this puja. So he just went on accepting. Brihaspati came in and left. Why did he leave? Because he knew Indra's going to fall down. Why? He made an offense. He did not honor a great Vaishnav when he came in. Romaharshan Sutta was speaking Vyasadeva's message. He was speaking Bhagavad philosophy to the sages of Naimasharanya. But he didn't stand up to offer reception to Balaram. Balaram understood such an offense. And he taught the world very strongly, we should not offend great souls. Romaharshan didn't say anything against Balaram. He didn't do anything. That's also an offense. So Brihaspati left. And as soon as he left, Indra, who's a very learned scholar and a very, very powerful Vaishnava. Don't think Indra's just an ordinary devotee in the Bhakta program. He offers yajna. Vishnu always personally comes in live in person and accepts the offerings. Very powerful. Indra knew, what have I done? I offended my guru. And because of that offense, he lost everything. The demons, they pleased their guru, Shukracharya, and they got power. And they rooted the demigods. Srila Prabhupada writes that when a devotee performs devotional service, all that devotee's relatives, near and dear ones, all get tremendous spiritual benefit by his or her devotional service. But when devotees make mistakes, relatives and near and dear ones also may have to share that offense. So all the demigods. They all began losing their positions. So Indra, I'm going to make this short because it says prasadam is ready.
Are you ready for prasadam? How many of you had big breakfast today? How many are hungry just now? Please be honest. Okay, for that one person, I'm going to end class very soon. I think he's so honestly speaking for everyone. Can tell the ocean by one drop. So. So Indra goes to Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and is told to go to Vishwarup. And Vishwarup would do a yajna by which Indra would be very powerful to conquer the demons. Vishwarup performed the yajna, gave Indra tremendous power, and he actually conquered and got all of his abode and everything and all his wealth back. But he found that Vishwarup, who had relatives on both the demon and demigod sides, he was impartial to everyone. He was everyone's well-wisher. So he offered an oblation for the benefit of the Asuras, and Indra found out about that and cut off his heads.
Hare Krishna.
We won't go into so many details, but just see how material desire, how false pride can corrupt a person's intelligence. He accepted Vishwarup as his guru. Vishwarup got everything back for him, gave him tremendous powers, protected him. But as soon as he did one thing that caused fear in Indra's heart, he killed him. Now, this is the nature of material affection. Material affection, love and hate are like different sides of the same coin. The potential is there. Instead of being grateful and seeing it as Krishna's arrangement, Indra killed him. And then he had to do all kinds of atonements because Vishwarup was a Brahmin. He was his guru. He was a great soul. He helped him. He saved him. The father of Vishwarup, Tvashta, was furious. He performed a yajna to create a demon who would be the enemy of Indra. But he chanted the mantra with a slight different pronunciation. And instead of saying the enemy of Indra, the word meant of whom Indra was the enemy. Now that may not make so much difference to all of you, but made a lot of difference to Tvashta. That means instead of the person who would kill Indra, it would mean the person who would be killed by Indra. So out from this fire came Vritrasura. Vritrasura, in his previous life, was the great, humble devotee, Maharaj Chitraketu. Instead of his beautiful spiritual form as Chitraketu, he now had the ugliest possible body. He was huge. He just caused fear to everyone. Now Chitraketu was only longing to be in the association of devotees. But he understood everything is the will of the Lord.
Poor Vritrasura.
Just imagine. Poor Chitraketu Maharaj. He's born as an enemy of the devotees. And his only associates are demons. And he's fighting for the demons. His duty is to kill the devotees. And he's hated by the devotees. But he has to do it because it's the will of the Lord. Totally misunderstood by everyone. All the sages, all the rishis, all the Vaishnavas, all the demigods who are Vaishnavas, they hate him. He's their worst enemy. They're all praying for him to be dead. And the demons, who are just lusty, proud, envious rascals, they don't love him. They just want to exploit him for their own purposes. Now, all of you are devotees. How would you like to be in that type of association? Where every devotee hates you and wants you to die. And the worst, most sinful demons are simply praising you to exploit you. Totally misunderstood. No one understood him. And he didn't have a mother. Usually, no matter how bad you are, your mother understands you. And even if you're really bad, your mother misunderstands you in such a way to think you're nice. Yes? Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they had diti. Even though all the devotees and all the demigods hated him, at least they had a mother saying, oh, you're so nice. They don't understand you. I know who you are. Yes? He didn't even have that. Ravana. What was it? Keshini? And Vishrava. He had a father, and Ravana had a mother and father who just thought he was just misunderstood. Blinded by parental affection. But Vritrasura had no mother. Oh, little Vritri, they just don't understand you. I know who you are. What's it like? Nothing. Everybody good hated him. And everyone bad was just wanted to use him, exploit him. Miserable situation. Totally misunderstood. Tatenu kampam susumikshimano. He accepted it because it was the will of the Lord. Many examples of this. Here, his dharma is to fight and kill the devotees. And he loves them all. He has to do it. Something like Bhishma. Bhishma loves the Pandavas more than anyone else on earth after Krishna. But he's obliged to fight against them. It was the will of Krishna to teach the world that even the greatest conqueror like Bhishma will be destroyed and defeated if he has the wrong association and take side with that bad people. Bhishma attained the ultimate perfection of life because he surrendered to the will of Krishna. But how he was misunderstood. Fighting against the great souls. Protecting the envious. Bhishma is a Mahajan. Mahajano yena gatasapanta. Vritrasura was following in the footsteps of the great Mahajan Bhishma in this regard. And he went into the battlefield, and all the asuras were with him. They attacked.
And the amazing thing is, the demon struck first. They were shooting arrows and thunderbolts, and they were, by their mystic powers, they were showering the demigods with mountains and trees and rocks and astras and brahmastras and all kinds of things. And somehow or other, by the power of Indra, fought against them. Now actually, before the fight, just by seeing Vritrasura, the demigods realized they were defeated. So they approached Vishnu. What are we going to do now? This Vritrasura single-handedly can destroy all of us. And the Lord told them they should approach Dadichi. And through the bones of his body, they should create a thunderbolt. And that thunderbolt will defeat Vritrasura. So demigods go to Dadichi. And they asked him, "We want you to die, so that we can take your bones and make them into a thunderbolt, so that we can regain our heavenly kingdoms and enjoy." Essentially, that's what they were asking. Dadichi jokingly said, "You are asking me something very difficult. People are willing to do anything to maintain their life, because without this body, you can't enjoy anything. People will beg, borrow, steal, sin, anything to protect this body. Body is so dear. It's our identity in this world. How can you expect me to just give up this body?" He wanted to hear religious principles from the devatas. And the devatas preached to him, "Actually, a great soul, for the benefit of others, is willing to even give up his life. Harivo. Practice what you preach, O devatas. For your sense gratification, you want this great Brahmin to die. And you're telling him that great souls should be willing to die for others. But we want you to die for us. So therefore you should die for us. Because great souls die for others." Arivo. Quite hypocritical. But they were attached. Dadichi was detached. He said, "Oh, thank you. You enlightened me so nicely. Now I will die." And he just went into meditation and merged his body into the five elements and merged his mind in remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead and attained perfection. And the demigods brought Vishwakarma, and with his help, they took all the bones of Dadichi and created a very, very formidable thunderbolt for Indra to fight Vritrasura. So Vritrasura led them on their attack. And the demons just showered the demigods with all kinds of weapons, and the demigods, along with Indra, just annihilated all their weapons. And the demons were so afraid. The demigods didn't even do anything to them. They just humbled them that all their weapons were powerless. So all the demons turned their backs and ran away. Hare Krishna. Vritrasura was looking at them. He chastised them. "Why are you running away? Come back and fight! Why are you such cowards? Do you not know in the Shastras there's two auspicious ways to die? Everyone has to die. There is no exception in this world. The soul is eternal. The body is temporary. Death is inevitable. But there are two auspicious ways to die. One is through the mystic yogic process, as a Vaishnava to fix your consciousness on Krishna at the time of death. Then you go back home, back to Godhead. And the other auspicious way to die is, if you're a Kshatriya, to die on the battlefield. If you win the battle, you get great opulences. If you die, you go to the heavenly planets and enjoy. So what is the harm? Come back and fight. But the demons were so frustrated because none of their weapons had any effect. They just kept running. And the demigods saw this and started running from behind them, just attacking them from behind. And Vritrasura chastised the demigods. So what? Why are you attacking them from behind? That means you're cowards. According to the laws of Kshatriya code, if one is a coward and running away, you never fight with them. You're shooting your weapons at the back of these cowardly demons. That means you're as cowardly as them. I'm standing right here before you, all alone, ready to fight you all single-handedly. If you have any real bravery or heroism, don't run after people fleeing away. Fight me. The entire army of demigods were assembled, and Vritrasura was ready to fight them single-handedly. He picked up his trident. It was a huge trident. And just attacked. And with his feet, he was crushing the demigods. When Indra saw his army being trampled to death by the feet of Vritrasura, poor Vritrasura. He's crushing devotees with his feet. But it was the will of the Lord. Indra stood before him, challenged. He threw a club, powerful, formidable club, toward Vritrasura, who effortlessly caught it with his left hand and then took Indra's club and smashed Airavata, Indra's elephant carrier, in the forehead. Airavata fell back 14 yards, vomited blood, and fell to the ground. Indra on top of him. Indra became really, really discouraged. Very, very discouraged. What am I going to do now? This man is so powerful. Vritrasura, as a Kshatriya, you have to speak weapons as well as throw weapons. He blasted against Indra. But actually, he was preaching to him with pure love and compassion. In the mood of a Kshatriya, he said, "Indra, you coward, you despicable fallen rascal, you killed Vishwarup. You killed a Brahmin. You killed your spiritual master. You killed my brother. Why? Because you're so despicably attached to your heavenly pleasures. That's all. Therefore, you deserve to die from the pointed spear of my trident. Hare Krishna. And when you die, Indra, you are so sinful even fire will not touch you to purify your body. You will simply be eaten by beastly, despicable vultures. The fight went. But then Indra was so discouraged, he just gave up. There's nothing I could do against this Vritrasura. He lost all faith in himself. It was in this setting that the verses we're reading today were spoken. Should I read you the verses? He was killed a Brahmin. He was killed a spiritual master. Indeed, he was killed. My brother is now, by good fortune, standing before me face to face as my enemy. O most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my other brother, a self-realized, sinful, qualified Brahmin who had appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his heads from his body the way one butchers an animal. Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruit of activities, you are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. Do you like this? Please listen carefully. You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with my sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes. But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero. This is so beautiful. The verses we just read is chastising Indra out of loving compassion to try to get him out of his maya, to try to cut through his false ego, to try to humble him from his egoistic position, to get him to actually repent for his material attachments and how that drove him to such abominable activities. But now, from this verse on, Vritrasura is calling him a great hero and telling what will happen if he kills him. And what a benediction it will be to Vritrasura. But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. Vritrasura is here. If you kill me, my body's abominable. I'm a demon. I don't care what happens to this body. You are so attached to your body. You offend your own guru. You kill your own guru.
nice Brahmin like Dadichi, you make him die just for your body? Well, as far as I'm concerned, I will take great pleasure in this wretched body of mine being eaten by vultures and jackals. But in my mind, in my heart, I will find complete shelter in the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. O King of the demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubts about this. He's telling Indra, you should not be so attached to your activities. Success, failure, honor, dishonor, these dualities, victory, defeat, loss and gain. Basic teaching of Gita, we should just perform our duties for the sake of Dharma, for the sake of Krishna's pleasure, and not be attached to the results. Why are you discouraged, Indra? You're just standing there as if you're defeated. You're not even willing to fight anymore because your club didn't work. You've given up your fight because of some setback. Don't worry. Keep fighting. This is a message to all of us. Srila Prabhupada explains that when we become devotees, we're declaring war against Maya. And in this war against Maya, there's the war and there's many battles. There's battles that happen every day, so many times. But the main war, that is what is of great concern. Sometimes in our devotional service, we may fail. Sometimes we may even be weak. Srila Prabhupada pleads with us, do not give up the fight. Even if you lose a battle, even if you lose a few battles, don't give up. Keep fighting against Maya. If we have good association of devotees, that association will empower us to carry on with the fight. If we take shelter of our sadhana and take shelter of the Vaishnavas, no matter how many setbacks may be there on the spiritual path, we can come back and ultimately, by the grace of the Lord, be victorious. We have seen devotees even fall down from the principles of Krishna consciousness, even fall very deeply into materialistic life and immoral activities, due to some offenses or some inattentiveness in their sadhana. But if they once again come in the association of devotees and get that encouragement, they can be empowered to make great comebacks. And in this life, go back home, back to Godhead. So a devotee should always be very, very strict not to fall victim to Maya. But even if there's a setback, we should never give up the association of Vaishnavas and never give up fighting the battle, the war. This is what Vritrasura is telling Indra and telling all of us. Krishna will help us if we just keep fighting. Never give up. No matter what, never give up. He says, your attack upon me was as useless as request for money from a miser.
Very nice example.
O Indra, king of heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been being empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore, your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured.
Vritrasura has complete faith in the blessings of Dadichi.
He has faith in the benediction of a Vaishnava.
Indra has lost his faith. That is the problem.
Vritrasura is preaching to him, have faith. Vishnu's on your side. You have been blessed by Dadichi. Your victory is assured. All you have to do is keep fighting.
And that is the situation for each and every one of us. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is on our side. The blessings of the Vaishnavas, the blessings of the spiritual masters has been given to us. We're guaranteed victory if we just keep fighting against Maya, if we just take shelter and do not give up.
By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed from material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Shankarshan, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narada Muni, just as Lord Shankarshan has said.
Vritrasura is eagerly longing for that thunderbolt to kill him.
Because he knows this thunderbolt, which is apparently his enemy,
is actually going to free him from all material bondage forever. It's not the thunderbolt. The thunderbolt is the instrument that will separate his soul from his body. But he has complete faith in the mercy of the Lord.
Antakali chamami vam smaran mukta kalevaram. Krishna tells, one who remembers me at the time of death will come to me without fail.
Vritrasura has his mind constantly fixed at the lotus feet of the great Vaishnavas and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he has complete faith that he will go back to Godhead. Therefore, he has no fear of death, no fear of pain. Bhajahure manasri nanda nandana abhaya charanada vindare. When one takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, one has no more fear. The all-pervading nature of material existence is fear. Vritrasura is exemplifying this perfectly. If we just fix our mind on Krishna in this life, Krishna will naturally be there by his own sweet will at the time of death. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us the simple, sublime means by which everyone and anyone can take shelter of Krishna in this age. By really striving to constantly chant the holy names. We chant our 16 rounds as attentively and as feelingly as possible. But that creates, not exactly creates, it invites the Lord into our heart to manifest Himself when we chant the holy names. But we should not be satisfied that we have just chanted 16 attentive good rounds in a day. Once we establish Krishna's presence in our heart in the morning when we chant, we should be striving at every possible moment to chant and remember Krishna's holy names. Maya is there everywhere. When the mind is idle, Maya is there to take over. So in every situation, we should engross our consciousness in service. But whenever possible, with our mind, with our lips, throughout the day, we should be struggling to constantly chant the holy names. Persons who have fully surrendered at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of His lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as His own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulences in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase, his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Did everyone hear that? Thus, one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. Yasyaha manugrinnami harishetadhanam shanai. When the Lord really bestows His mercy upon a sincere devotee, He does not give the devotee such opulences. Because such opulences in this world, as we see with Indra and the Devatas and so many people in our contemporary world, these opulences increase anxiety, enmity. Why enmity? Because there's so much competition of people who want that. And if there's any attachment at all to what you have in material opulence, you'll be envious of people who have more. And you'll be fearful of people who are trying to get what you have. Therefore, enmity. A devotee is supposed to be a well-wisher of all living beings. Anxieties, because there's so much burden to protect it, to increase it. Mental agitation. And because you have more than others, there's pride and belligerence. When there's pride, you misuse others by acting and speaking harshly toward them. And thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions. In other words, you become a prisoner of success. And he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. O Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead forbids His devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic developments, and sense gratification. O Indra, when one can thus infer how kind the Lord is, such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada explains how when the Lord gives us opulences and we use them for the welfare of others and in the service of Krishna, then those opulences are ornaments. in our devotional service. They do not distract us. They do not create mental anxiety, agitation, enmity, pride, and belligerence. But if they're used in Krishna service, they create Krishna consciousness.
Oh my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engaged in the loving service of your Lordship? O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, the heavenly planets or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. And then he offers this beautiful prayer. Like a baby bird is longing for its mother to come to feed it, as the little calf is longing for the mother to come for it could drink milk from her udder, or as the chaste, faithful wife who's in distress is longing for the return of her beloved husband. I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service to you. So beautiful. His longing is not to see the Lord. His longing is to serve the Lord. This is the perfection of life. To long, to hanker, to crave, to serve the Lord, to please the Lord. This is of millions of times more blissful than mukti, to be in the neutral state. Of the conception of being one with God. Prema is like a vast ocean, whereas impersonal mukti is not even a drop in comparison in relation to the happiness we derive. He's longing to serve the Lord, to please the Lord. O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy, but I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. Vritrasura, in the perfectly enlightened state, is teaching us. He is simply seeking friendship in the association of devotees. No greater benediction. It is the highest blessing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in our lives to have friendship in the association of devotees. We should not take it lightly or for granted. It has taken us millions and millions of births. Suffering, birth, old age, disease, and death to finally come to the point where the doors to the spiritual world are being opened before us through friendship and the association of devotees. Vritrasura, this great, great Vaishnava, has already in previous verses said, I don't want mystic powers. I don't want elevation to heavenly planets. I don't want any type of material pleasures. I don't even want liberation. But what I do long for, what I do seek, is friendship in the association of devotees. That is why we are here at the Puna Yatra. To actually apply all that we're hearing and benefit, we have to learn how to make friendships in the association of devotees. And what does friendship mean? For Vaishnavas, friendship is unconditional. We are willing to tolerate our differences, and there are so many differences. There may be difference in caste, may be different in nationality, may be difference in educational qualifications, may be difference in economic situations. There may be difference in the way we talk and the way we act and the way we think. They are all conditional and temporary. But our friendship is on a higher level than all of these. Our friendship is you are a spirit soul part of Krishna and I am a spirit soul part of Krishna. You are a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and I am a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are brothers. We are sisters. Real friendship. Let us rise above all these reasons to quarrel and not like each other, and there are unlimited such reasons. And Maya presents them just to keep us bound to material suffering. If we cannot forgive each other, if we cannot come to a higher platform of uniting for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, then we are not fit for the real mercy of the Lord. Because the mercy of the Lord is the association of devotees. If we cannot make friendships, we are rejecting the mercy the Lord has given us. And the only way to have a lasting friendship in the association of devotees, we must rise above all these dualities and all these temporary mental and physical differences. Real union is I love you and I respect you because you are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotee. And please help me. I need your help. And in whatever way I can serve you, I will help you. We will speak about Krishna together. If you're down, I'll help you up. If I'm down, please help me up. We'll remind each other of Krishna. We'll encourage and enthuse each other in our devotional services. We'll help each other physically, mentally, spiritually, on every level to protect each other from Maya. We'll take prasad together. We'll exchange gifts together. We'll reveal our minds together. We won't criticize each other. We'll forgive each other. We'll encourage each other. We'll raise our arms together. Dance in kirtan. And together, our hearts will become one. As we lovingly cry out,
the Lord's Holy Name. That is Vaishnava culture.
Pitrasura tells, when we seek friendship in the association of your pious, enlightened devotees, then naturally our attachment to all material impediments is relieved. And then only can we fix our consciousness. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. This is the prayer of Queen Kunti. Vai me nanya vishaya matir madhupate sukrit ratin udvahatad adha gangevo gam udanvati. Kunti prays, as a mother, as a lady, I'm naturally very attached to all these family matters. Please relieve me of all these family attachments and let my attraction be only to you. Kunti Devi never gave up her responsibilities for her family. Kunti Devi never gave up her love for her family members. But the mundane bodily attachment was transformed into Vaishnav Seva. A devotee is attached to helping the spirit souls come closer to Krishna. That is real love. And that includes our own family members. Srila Prabhupada said, if you put Krishna in the center of your family life, wife, husband, children, in-laws, everything else, it becomes Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. But when we're seeking to satisfy their senses or my senses for material, it becomes a great impediment. Kunti Devi said, sever those attachments. As the river Ganges flows to the sea without interruption, let my attraction forever be drawn to you, my Lord, Sri Krishna, without being diverted to anyone else. This is the prayer of Kunti. This is the prayer of Ritrasura. Could there be two more opposite people in creation from a physical platform? Amazing story. Think of Queen Kunti, elderly lady, pure in heart, so motherly with love and affection, so soft, who suffered so many reversals in her mind. In her life, that motherly loving lady is praying. And Ritrasura, gigantic, massive, ugly asura, standing in the battlefield with a trident. When he roared, all the demigods fell unconscious. So there is much variegatedness amongst Vaishnavas. There is Ritrasura, there is Kunti Devi. Physically, in every way, they're absolute opposites. But they're offering the same exact prayer from the core of their hearts. We should not judge a Vaishnava simply by external appearance. But we understand a Vaishnava by their motivations, by their purpose. Ritrasura and Kunti are one in heart. They're humbly, simply praying
for the association of devotees, and to always remember Krishna in that association, and to never forget Him. So that with a feeling, loving heart, in life and death, with love, they could recite His holy names. That brings us to the verses that the Brahmacharis has given us to speak on today.
Of course, Vritrasura had to perform his duty. He fought. He actually fought with all his might, but he knew he was going to die. It was all just a show, in one sense. It was a service. He attacked Indra with his club. Indra chopped off his arm. Then he attacked with his other arm, and Indra chopped off that arm. Yes? And then he had no arms. But still, it was his duty. It was his duty to make the Srimad Bhagavatam as exciting as possible. So, the amazing thing, he was doing his best, even though he knew he would die. He knew he would lose, because it was Vishnu's will. He wanted to lose, but he was trying to win. Just as a matter of service. He opened his mouth and swallowed Indra. Hare Krishna. But Indra, because he had this Narayan Kavacha, and who gave Indra Narayan Kavacha? Does anyone know? Huh? Vishwarup, yes? Vishwarup, the person he killed, Vritrasura's brother, was protecting him with the gift that he gave him. So Indra went into Vishwarup's belly after being swallowed by him. And Vritrasura, he just went into samadhi, fell asleep and just meditated on Krishna. There's nothing else. He knew Indra would kill him, no matter what. And Indra, just with his thunderbolt, somehow or other, came out of the abdomen, and then went, and with that thunderbolt, he cut Vritrasura's head. But Vritrasura, because when you're in samadhi, your neck becomes very stiff, and he was in total mahasamadhi. Just meditating on Krishna. He's smiling like this. And Indra was trying to chop off his head while he's in samadhi. It took Indra one full year of constant day and night just chopping. And Vritrasura went back home, back to Godhead. And Indra was stuck in the material world, in mental agitation and anxiety, trying to enjoy his opulences in the heavenly world. So who won? In losing the battle, apparently, Vritrasura attained the highest victory of going back home, back to Godhead. In winning the battle, apparently, Indra was stuck in this material world where he kept making all kinds of aparads and everything else. He's always in anxiety about so many things, trying to enjoy. The
through this lesson we understand what is of real value in our life. Krishna consciousness, the gift Srila Prabhupada has given us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Vritrasura Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.
We have three choices. Questions and answers, kirtan or prasad. Huh? Oh, Guru Puja. Guru Puja? Eddie, we will have Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada and then we will all go for prasad. Will be announced.